Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, today my guest is Mark Millay. Mark is a retired naval officer and aviator. After leaving the military, Mark founded Reformed, which provides a place for veteran and military spouse entrepreneurs to connect with the community and business services that they can trust. So welcome to the show, Mark. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, hey, thanks, Scott. And no worries, pausing when you get to my last name is a pretty common occurrence in my life. So I know with a name like DeLuzio, you get the same, but right. No worries. So yeah, I was a naval aviator in my adult life. In fact, my call sign was, and if you ask my Navy friends, is FUN, which coincidentally stands for effed up name. So I've grown up with that. I was a Naval Academy graduate back in 1996, became a naval aviator, flew the F-14 Tomcat. I had the privilege of being a Top Gun instructor through the beginning days of the Iraq War. Made 5 deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, like all of us have. And then made a transition to work for JSOC for a couple of years as an operational planner. After that, I came up here where I live now to Annapolis, Maryland, to instruct at the Naval Academy to corrupt young minds. To create young Naval officers, Marine Corps officers, and to teach in the political science department. Retired in late 2017. And today, after a really struggle-filled first year as an entrepreneur in 2018, my business pivoted to support what you said, veterans, military spouses, and new to the news to us is elite athletes. Help all that community launch and grow their businesses.
Awesome. Yeah. So when we were emailing back and forth to get you on the show a few weeks ago, you had mentioned that you deployed on the USS Teddy Roosevelt in back in 2009, 2010 time period. I think we probably had some overlap on that deployment because I got to Afghanistan in the early part of 2010. Mm-hmm. But you had mentioned that this deployment had changed the trajectory of your life. And I'm interested in hearing more about this deployment and what took place during that deployment for you.
Yeah, Scott, what a great, what a loaded question, my friend. Whenever you encounter somebody else from whatever their service who said, hey, I was in Afghanistan as well in 2009 and 10. Let's talk about it. Boy, what a time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a pivotal time in my life, as it was in a lot of our lives. The troop surge, this was year 8, 9 of Operation Enduring Freedom. The war had matured, yet so much was stagnant, and it was such a bloody conflict in which we were trying to win hearts and minds. I recall, this was it General McChrystal who was the ISAF commander at the time, and under him, the rules of engagement were undergoing a period of transition, trying to return to this the idea that we are not ever going to win this war if we don't win the hearts and minds of the Afghan people, and you don't do that by blowing up every building that has a suspected insurgent inside it. Well, so what that was the period we were in was that phase of the conflict. And with the troop surge going on, there was also escalation of attacks on American forces. Well, for us flying off the USS Theodore Roosevelt, we left Virginia Beach in 2009, thinking we were going on a 6-month deployment, like most Navy deployments were to date. Scott, we ended up staying there for 9 months, and it was because of just how much turmoil there was in everything I just shared, as well as I recall there was this major troop a transfer of control of the Helmand province. And if you remember, that was the south central province near Kandahar and that whole area. It was a very dangerous spot. And American Marines were turning it over to British Army and Marines, and the turnover was just so tumultuous that we remained on station for an extra 3 months. To make a long story short, we can dive into some of the details. During that 9 month deployment, the American Marines we supported lost 24 of their brothers and sisters to insurgent attacks. And this was, and our under our British Marine and Army friends lost 55. Oh, wow. This will stay with me for the rest of my life, because we tallied that at the end of our stay as we head back home. And the Navy was like, great job. Welcome back to Norfolk, Virginia Beach. You guys have crushed it, keeping an American democracy strong and looking after national interests. And I'm like, I remember turning to a friend thinking like, is this what victory feels like? I mean, under our watch, I mean, 79 men and women were killed. Mm-hmm. And what did we accomplish? We were part of a very bloody, contest on the ground for terrain, as you remember, right, being in the Army. And personally, I was involved in a number of engagements that led to us targeting insurgent positions with weapons, either GPS laser guided bombs or our 20 millimeter cannon. We did a lot of kinetic activity. Remember that?
Yes.
Leaving that deployment was I left unsettled. We took a lot of lives. We scorched a lot of earth. And rightly, we did it in the name of protecting our coalition and American brothers and sisters on the ground. Whether we advanced American interests on the ground is another question. And I remember leaving that deployment. We literally pulled out and we almost didn't want to leave. You remember that feeling when you're like at the end of a deployment and you're like, we are the experts here. We know how to deal with the enemy. We know the terrain. You know, we know the field. We know what our weaknesses are. We know what our strengths are. We felt that as on that aircraft carrier.
And then you're just turning it over to fresh meat, basically.
Fresh faces from Virginia Beach are like, hey guys, we're here to take over. And you're like, oh my God, if you guys only knew what you're going to learn, we'll try to teach you in like, what was it? We would be given like 72 hours for a turnover. Like,
right.
And begin to teach you what we would do the best we could. And I appreciate that, you know, the Navy did the best they could to facilitate those handovers. I think there was a name for it. I forget what the turnover name was back then. But we would, I remember feeling like we had just facilitated this transition of power on the ground from American Marines to the British Army and Marine Corps. And it was a bloody turnover. The American Marines figured it out. I mean, they understood how to deal with insurgent forces. And the British, though, came in, and it felt like they came in and just kicked a hornet's nest. And whenever those guys and girls would go on patrol, they were in a troops in contact situation routinely. And it just felt like something changed. And our lives were much more complicated because, you know, we were applying these new rules of engagement and trying to de-escalate. But the British were new on the ground, and they were like, bomb that building, bomb that area. They wanted to blow up everything. And we in the air had to be like, hey, have you done these following things? We're not. Nah. And it really came to a head for me, Scott. And I don't want to answer this question's going to lead to others. I was put in a position where I almost committed a fratricide, where a British patrol lost track of another British patrol and cleared us hot to drop weapons on the other patrol. It was one of those situations where I was in a two-person Super Hornet, Jason Gustin, who is a friend to this day. And Jason and I, we just executed our training and we showed a little bit of tactical patience. We knew we had 5 minutes before they were even close to each other. One British patrol thought the other was insurgent forces and they weren't in touch. And we were a little patient, but we were, our fangs were up and we were about to drop weapons. And, we didn't, not because we knew better, but because we decided to wait. And we decided to wait for a better opportunity, but we were also waiting because we could. And we knew that the ROE drove a more patient posture. And that British JTAC on the ground was yelling at us to drop weapons. And we said, stand by, stand by, stand by. And all of a sudden another British voice crackles in the radio. remember the old KY58 encrypted radios? They were terrible anyway, but on the radio, and it was a different British voice, and they checked in with each other like it was like no big deal. And we were like, okay, I guess you don't need us anymore. We're going to head back to the
ship. Right.
That event there kept me up for days, because had I done just what we were told to do, I would have had the lives of 10 young British soldiers on my hands for the rest of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And that gives you that what if, you know, thing in the back of your head that you keep probably torturing yourself with to try to justify it in your head, you know?
Oh, and I can't imagine what I would have gone through, but I didn't have to, not because I was good, but because I was slightly patient and because I was very lucky.
Yeah.
And I can imagine those, of our brothers and sisters who were just as good, but were not as lucky. Mm-hmm. And what they deal with today, as they wake up every morning and think about those same situations that they were just not as lucky to get out of. So for me, coming off that deployment was just, it was hard. It was hard leaving that and coming back to the States. So, I'll wrap up this long-winded answer to your question by saying, a buddy of mine, Paul Fermo, his call sign was Malvo. Malvo is named after the DC sniper, and totally inappropriate, but your guests will appreciate it. Malvo, because he never turned down a target. Lee Boyd Malvo, the DC sniper who took many lives back in 2000.
Right.
Very sad story. But Malvo is a great friend of mine to this day. He and I wanted to do something more before we got back to the States. And we decided to organize a flight deck marathon on the Teddy Roosevelt.
Okay. And
how do you do that? We got a, one of those like roller measure things to measure out a mile. And believe it or not, like three laps around a carrier flight deck is a mile. And so we were like, did the math. We're like, all right, so 3 times 26.2. We measured out a marathon on the flight deck, and we turned it into a fundraiser for the entire ship. And we connected with our friends and families back home, and we raised like $25,000.
Oh, wow. For
both the American Wounded Warrior Project. And this is before that whole organization kind of fell apart. And the British equivalent called the British Help for Heroes organization, both serving, the disabled, wounded, combat disabled veterans. Right. And coincidentally, the ship would pull into Portsmouth, England, and we had an opportunity to meet with Help for Heroes, present them a check. And then we pulled into Jacksonville, Florida, and did the same thing with the Wounded Warrior Project. So in hindsight, at the end of that deployment that was so bloody and changed a lot of our lives forever, it was just surreal to be able to meet with those two entities, to present them a check from the sailors and crew of this American aircraft carrier that had just been in Afghanistan for 9 months, to both the British, who had lost 55 young men and women, and the Americans, it was a Wounded Warrior Project, but to the American side, who had lost 24. So that deployment really changed the course of my life for all those reasons.
Yeah, and I think that's a great background story and kind of a good segue into, where you transitioned, as you were getting out of the Navy and, into what you're doing now. But before getting out of the Navy, what did that look like for you? Did you have a plan for what you wanted to do when you got out? Did you have a exit strategy, or if you want to call it that, or were you sort of just kind of winging it when you got out?
Yeah, in one word, nope.
Yeah. So I mean, that does seem like a common thing that a lot of people, when they're getting out, they're done and they just want to be done, and they just write it off and that's that. But other people do have more of a strategy. They're planning, 6 months, 9 months out or whatever. And they're trying to, make connections with people and, try to figure out what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. But, some other people, in your case, didn't really have much of a strategy, getting out. So what was it like for you to, as you were getting out?
It was, I think my experience was a little bit unique, only because I think we all approach the transition based on how much risk we can take. And for me, as I was a retiring 05, I was what, 43 years old. I was 43 going on 29. I felt like I was 20% disabled. I had no issues. You know, everything was good to go. I was financially stable, and I really had, but I was not married, didn't have kids. So I could take a lot more risk and I could open up my aperture to what I wanted to do. So mm-hmm. I really took a broader look. When I say nope, I say that facetiously because I was looking at everything. And right. It took me a couple of months to narrow that down to, look, I can do anything in this next phase of life. I remember thinking like, I can move to Scotland and raise goats. I mean, that would be kind of cool. Like, why would you do that? But I could do that. Well, I was on a hike in Idaho the fall I was retiring. I think I was on terminal leave. And I ran a campfire one night. I've been like, you know what? I was brainstorming on what I wanted to focus on in my next phase of life. And I settled on, I want to build a business and be an entrepreneur. Number two, I want to be involved in sustainability because it's an area that I care about that I had not been able to influence yet in my adult life. And number three, I wanted to somehow support the veteran community. So from there, those three priorities propelled me in what would be the next year's journey in opening up the entrepreneurial life that I still live today.
Right.
But I could never have predicted the series of doors that would have opened up one after another as I walked down that path.
And so what did that initial entry into entrepreneurship look like for you? What was your, did you start off with Reformed when you first got out of the Navy, or was this an evolution kind of process that you went through?
No, for me, it was, again, it was opening up one door at a time. I didn't know I was going to be starting my own business, let alone, you know, or maybe partnering with people, finding, I didn't know anybody else that was interested in starting a business in sustainability in downtown Annapolis, Maryland, and helping veterans. I had to go seek out, I had to go kind of look at the terrain, find what's going on out there. As I took inventory of what my strengths were, a lot of soft skills, like we all have coming out of the military, all the leadership, you know, project management, organization, time management, all those soft skills are wonderful. None of those rhyme with sustainability or rhyme with running a business. So
right.
I sought out like, okay, what can I, let alone technical abilities in anything sustainability wise. So what happened is I got connected to some, I was like composting. I randomly chose composting as this thing I was interested in. I'm like, it's easy. There's a demand for it. I want to learn about it. And so I did, and I got connected to people who were developing a project for the Marine Corps as a proof of concept to demonstrate how Marine Corps food waste in the field could be anaerobically digested to be turned into energy. Really cool thing. And I remember having breakfast with these guys. I was connected to them, and I liked what they were doing. They were really innovative thinkers, really forward leaning in the technology. And I asked him like, hey, can I help you out and just turn some wrenches? And no, you know, I have no skills. You don't need to pay me anything, but I just want to intern with you, if you will. Well, I joined their team as an unpaid intern. And a year later, after a lot of effort and after winning a state grant, a $640,000 state grant, and winning a pitch contest from Sam Adams, the beer man,
okay.
The beer company, won $15,000 from Sam Adams and a mentorship meeting with Jim Cook, the founder. I found myself at Jim Cook's, in Jim Cook's office in Boston.
Wow.
And over a 3-hour meeting, Jim Cook confirmed my concerns about this business effort I was growing. I had grown Reformed. I built it to be an anaerobic digestion focused business. It produced four products, hence the number four in the name. carbon dioxide, methane, digestate, which is the compost material, and purified water. Hence, Reformed Camp was born as a company. Well, I'm sitting in his office. I'm sharing, well, Jim, this is where the name Reform comes from. Here's my pro forma, and I really need to build more projects in order to make this sustainable. But my business partners, who I'm about to sign a partner agreement with, don't want me to maintain 51% of this company as a service-disabled veteran company. And he said, Mark, that's all I need to hear. Don't do it. Don't partner with them. Your SDVOSB status, whether it's certified by the SBA, the VA, doesn't matter. He's like, that is your most valuable marketing aspect in the sustainability world. Back out of this. Change. He's like, he said something to the extent of, mind your runway. How much runway do you have left? And don't be afraid to change the runway you're on. So I left that meeting with him, and it took me only a couple days to come meet my future partners and back out of the entire thing. And so I left. And I left that really uncertain what I wanted to do. But I tell you what, really quickly, in those ensuing days, I was repainting an F-14 Tomcat. That's a story. And I realized how much I'd learned in the previous year through all the veteran support and military spouse business support that was out there. And I wanted to pay forward what I had learned. And that was the start of this great pivot to for Reformed to do what it is today. So it's out of that great failure that today, you know, I'm growing this effort to help others have a much easier time in their first year of launching and growing their business.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the way you look at it too, because you got really great advice and that allowed you to pivot from what you originally were planning on doing to what you're currently doing now. I don't really see that necessarily as a failure. It's a learning experience. And I think that's the way all learning experiences throughout your whole life are going to involve some degree of what some people might consider a failure, where you try something and don't get it right the very first time. But you know, with entrepreneurship, you're constantly evolving what you're doing, and you're totally changing things from one way of doing things to another. And it seems like what you're doing now is on the right track, and it seems like it's fitting in line with a lot of what you're trying to do to begin with.
Hey Scott, do you think we talk about failure differently as we become entrepreneurs and business oriented from when we were active duty? Do you think that, we were how scared we were we talked about failure, but we embraced it. It was like, right. But I'm only asking because I find myself using the term failing forward a lot.
Okay.
I sometimes feel like I'm making that up.
I think we're also hard on ourselves with that, where to you, this felt like a failure. You felt like
it felt like a failure.
You put in all this time, all this effort. You met with these people.
I was putting wrenches. I won a state grant. I mean, I was in the shit. I mean, right. I was turning organic material, manure, food waste into energy and figuring out how to do it. And then a billionaire, B-Mogul, basically told me to back out of it.
Right. And so that seems like a failure. I could see how that would seem like a failure to you. But at the same time, you also have to give yourself a little bit of grace because, how many businesses had you run prior to this? How much business experience did you have coming out of the Navy? Yes, like you said, you had a lot of those soft skills, some leadership skills and things like that. But, this is still your first rodeo as far as your business experience goes. And,
that's really why when I talk to newer entrepreneurs today, I share a bit of that story. And I share that what I learned is that your entrepreneurial journey is a series of doors opening. It's very different than your military experience. which is certainly a series of doors opening, but there are a series of predictable doors. You know, there's only there's a certain number, you know, there's, but in your entrepreneurial journey, where you start, and maybe it's true about transition, I don't know, but where you start is gonna look nowhere. It's gonna look nothing like where you end at year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And as you look back, you're gonna say, oh my God, how did that happen?
Right.
You know, and I find, so what I tell these new entrepreneurs is to be careful creating that 5-year plan, let alone a 10-year business plan. Like, I mean, who could have predicted that COVID was going to occur in 2020? So as a, you know, that's a very obvious example, but, you know, be careful planning beyond a year. Think about those short-term goals and where you're, what's the next sprint? It's very like, you're involved in software development. It's very scrummy, you know, and OODA loop, you know, to do, think of your life as smaller iterative loops where you can do the work real quick, sprint and do something small and then test it and confirm with your customer. That's what we want to do. And then do it again and then do it again and do it again. And that's what my entrepreneurial journey has felt like, which is probably the biggest change from my military experience.
Right. And so from a military perspective, it might seem like a failure. You know, in the military, you have a mission. This is your objective. You go execute that mission. If you do that, great, you've succeeded, mission success. If you didn't, then mission has failed. And it's kind of very black and white in a lot of cases. You know, not every single time, but you know, it's a very black and white. But in business, things are a little bit more gray, and you can kind of chalk some things up to learning experiences, and they could be considered a success. As long as you're making the right direction, right decisions to move yourself in the right direction.
Back to failing forward. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's a good term to describe, you know, what you might describe as a failure, to, you know, when you continue moving forward and you continue making progress, you know, you've maybe failed at that initial attempt, but you've like you said, you've learned from that initial attempt. You're iterating and you're changing things up, and you're still moving forward. It's not like you failed and then you just threw in the towel and said, well, screw it, I'm going to go, you know, get a job doing something else, you know, and you just throw in the towel, and that would be to me a failure, because you just up and quit, and that's not really the spirit of entrepreneurship, where you're gonna you know, maybe get your hands a little dirty and try to figure things out, but you know, you've kept going, and so as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't seem like it's a failure.
The word that comes to mind is resilience, and you know, you and I are probably around the same age, and like, I definitely believe that I'm a far more resilient person now at what, 47, than I was at 37, than I was at 27. Mm-hmm. And I think if I got out at 27 or 37, I would have been a far less resilient entrepreneur, and I would have failed in a different way. And when I look, I engage with a lot of younger entrepreneurs now, and I see the challenges they face. And I was just talking to one a couple of days ago who had this really bad experience with another veteran business. And because of this one bad experience with another veteran business, he's like, I'm done working with veteran businesses. I'm like, wait, what do you mean? You know, and we're in the middle of this conversation right now. And I'm like, okay, there's more to that, but come on, my friend, you got to be more resilient than that to give it people that you share so much with.
Yeah. And you know, maybe, you know, don't work with that one particular company, but to write off all veteran businesses as a whole, that seems a little too much, you know, for that.
Throwing in the towel, giving up, you know, I look at my life and, you know, it would have been, I don't know, in my 3 years as an entrepreneur, I've never once considered throwing in the towel. It was always like, okay, that didn't work out. Now what am I going to try?
Yep.
And even when I was active duty, I don't recall ever throwing, you know, considering throwing in the towel. Of course, I stayed in for 22 years. So that's just, I don't know. I was committed. I believed in it. But that has built that resiliency now. It's like,
right.
And maybe that's what makes me feel so comfortable working amongst the veteran and really now the military spouse community, is that comfort of that feeling. I feel resilient among these people, you know?
Right. Yep. No. Yeah. And they bring their own resiliency, which is, I feel like that could be contagious, where in a good way, so you see somebody else who's not going to quit and throw in the towel, and they just keep plugging away, and they keep working at whatever it is that they're working at. Yeah. And you want to be more like that, and you tend to feed off of each other that way.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I know you said in the pre-show conversation, you're like, hey, we'll talk about your business too. Let me bring up my business right now, because
I was actually going to transition into that. I want to get into your business and what you do and everything like that too, but
okay, this conversation on resilience and building resilience into the business. Well, my biggest challenge is, like many of us, is scaling my business to become, not just a sustainable revenue generating entity, impact generating entity. But it's to be like this, a force to reckon with in the veteran and military spouse small business world. Well, scaling the growth, both regionally, impact, people in the community, I want everything to grow. But I've realized, I can grow this, my business regionally, and we can share what we do with we'd run all calls, they're regional networking events. I can increase the throughput of veterans and military spouses, but what if I could reach other communities of people that share a similar ethos and value set as us? Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you know, I went through a program a couple of weeks ago through Dartmouth's Tuck School of Business called Next Step. And it's a transition program. It's like 75% transition, 25% business oriented, but half the people are veterans and the other half are elite national team athletes, Olympians.
Okay.
We have this, I'm like, oh my God, we share the same ethos and values and Scott, same approach to resiliency. It blew me away. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I really do want to be surrounded by these people who share the same approach to resiliency as I do, who gain strength in each other. And so as I scale my business, you read those the introduction, you're like, hey, my business supports veterans and military spouses. And I was like, hey, Scott, actually now we're also supporting elite athletes. And if you wore our nation's cloth in combat or competition or supported those who have, my business is here to support you. And in close parents, it's because I love working with you people because you make me feel stronger,
Right. Yeah.
Hope I make you feel stronger. And that's what I mean by that. And that's why wanted to include these Olympian national team athletes in what we're doing as veterans.
Yeah, and in a way, I never really thought about it, but in a way, these elite athletes, the Olympians and people like that, they probably go through a very similar transition out of their sport that, maybe they've been working at this all their lives, mm-hmm. and they've reached the end of their competitive years, perhaps. And all they've ever known was their exercise routines and their practices and everything like that. That's all they've really ever known. And they probably didn't give too much consideration to what's next, what comes after this. And so, it's very similar to the military, where a lot of people maybe just are not giving too much consideration to that what's next. So that I can see a lot of synergy there with the two groups where
I find the sacrifices so similar, in fact more extreme. Like when did you enlist in the Army? How old were you?
I was 24. Okay, so 24. I was older. I was on the older side.
So like I imagine being a women's Team USA hockey player who got into hockey at the age of 6.
Yeah.
Or a speed skater who got into the sport at the age of 7. You know what I mean? Their lives have been revolving around that sport for 20 years. And you know, they're the top 10. I learned this through the group. The top 10% might get sponsored by a company. The other 90% are on their own. And it's a really dog eat dog world out there. And so what I realized is like, oh my gosh, we as veterans get so much transition support. We need to stop whining. Mm-hmm. You know, we get so much support. We need to use that support.
Yes.
Not clamor for more. I mean, I know there's some people out there who might disagree with me, but generally, relative to other communities in our country, we get a ton of support. In the business world and entrepreneur world, veterans get a ton of support. Look at military spouses. I think they're finally getting the support they need. And I love that because it's, as I believe, it's all about strengthening the overall military family. Right. And if you support a veteran or a military spouse, small business, or an entrepreneur, you're supporting your overall military family. But you know what? These Olympic athletes get zero support. And anything we can do to help them out after they've dedicated their last 20 years towards winning for our nation in global competition. I mean, the least we can do is open up our resources and our help and our selflessness to them as well. And I think you find, as I have, boy, it's like bring them into the fold and into the trust tree. You're like, oh my gosh, you have the same perspective on being resilient. You share the same warrior ethos I do. I'm here to help you.
Yeah. No, and that's great. And I think, you know, as far as like scaling a business, you know, the more groups of people that you can open up to, the better. And especially if they are, you know, they do have some similarities between the different groups, it makes your job easier because then you have that same kind of mindset going into it with, you know, how do I approach these people? How do I talk their language and get them on board with these programs. So let's talk a little bit about you know, Reformed and what it is that you do, how you connect these communities of people together and what it is exactly that you do.
Hey, yeah, thanks for asking. Bottom line, when I was in my first year of entrepreneurship, I realized I was, and I didn't even know this at the time, but what I now know I was missing were two things: a community of support that of like-minded veteran entrepreneurs that could guide me through all the challenges I faced. The second thing I was missing was a family of go-to back office business services that I could turn to for website development, for a law firm, for business cards, for you name it, all the things involved with growing a business. And you know, I mean, just as well as I, about like, oh, make sure you go get your legal team and your insurance team and da, 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 da. And I'm like, where do you find these things? And I wasted a lot of time and frankly, not a lot of money, but enough money to wish I had back then a family of go-to veteran delivered services, people I could trust, who look like you and me. Feel right. Like, you know, who shed the same ethos as you and me. I shouldn't say look like me, you and me, because I could care less about how we look, but it's how you, what your ethos is and what your values are. And
right.
Can we talk about Afghanistan 2010, you know?
right. Exactly. Yeah.
And I, as I pivoted, the great pivot I did in 2018, 19, after meeting with Jim Cook of Sam Adams, did that. I pivoted Reform to fill the missing pieces in the veteran military spouse entrepreneur support world between things like Boots to Business and the boot camps like Patriot Boot Camp and maybe Bunker Labs, occasional events, and the other end of like the high-end accelerators and incubators that venture capital world runs, be it TechStars or Bunker Labs Veterans in Residence program. I wanted to build what's in the middle, which supports those veterans and military spouses who are in the ideation phase or in the first year or second year of growing their business. And all they want to do as they're bootstrapping it is do it affordably with people they trust, and they want to grow clients, they want to grow customers. How do we help those people out? And this is a underserved segment of the veteran military's population. That's who Reformed is serving. We do it three different ways. we have a series of regional networking mutual support events. We call them All Calls. They're no cost, high quality, a lot of fun, and they're nothing more than executive pitch sessions where you can pitch your business, share your challenges. You have 2 minutes to do it. And then people are going to give you feedback and ideas and connections. And then we do these in Washington, D.C. We do it in Texas. We're launching one. We've done it in the Twin Cities. We're now doing it in Colorado. And I'm looking to build one in the Pacific Northwest. Ultimately, the Bay Area, Florida, and get this, Arizona. So awesome. All the hubs where veteran entrepreneurs are strong. That's the growth plan for these. Number two, we've grown a family of vetted business services that are all veteran, military spouse, and now national team level athlete owned businesses. People who you share these values with, we've built a family of 36 services. Like I said, we cover everything you might need. You need someone to make your company's t-shirts, come talk to me. You need a payroll, bookkeeping, accounting, come talk to me. We have all of these services that are all veteran owned. And not only are those services high quality, the owners of these companies are like you and me. They're not just great service providers, they're great mentors. And they will teach you as well as serve you. So those two critical areas are what make Reformed unique from the rest of the veteran and military spouse entrepreneur ecosystem. And that's what I call it the ecosystem, because it's all about like, hey, we're supporting new entrepreneurs. We're supporting the established entrepreneurs. We're connecting them. Everybody's growing together. And yep. Ultimately, I think we can be an example for the rest of the nation's civilian entrepreneur core on how they can model how they support one another.
Yeah, that's great. And I like how you're supporting each other, you know, referring, you know, vetted businesses, you know, to each other, networking and everything like that. I think that's wonderful. You know, how all of that kind of comes together, yeah. You know, in under this umbrella of the business. So, so that's great. So as a veteran owned business or a military spouse owned business, or, you know, one of these elite athlete owned businesses, how would I get involved with Reformed and what you do?
There's two easy ways. So number one is to come attend any of our all calls. They are, like I said, no cost, high quality, really organic. You don't need to have an established 2-minute pitch. We just want to hear who you are, what you do, and what your challenges are. I hope in the show notes you put just a link to our website. If you go to our all call tab, you can find out where to register for these events. We do one event in each region per month. And here's the laydown, Scott. First week we do it of each month, we do it in DC. Second week of each month, we do it in Texas. Third week of each month, we do it in Colorado. Fourth week of each month, we've been doing a workshop hosted by a member of our community. For example, this month, it's going to be on intellectual property for the small business that is working on branding its business.
Okay.
And I'm hopeful that will also add a Pacific Northwest all call too. So that's one way you can connect in. The other way, it's good old fashioned. Send me an email at markmalay@reform.com. You can find a link to it on our website as well. Just shoot me a note. Let's set up some time to talk. Let me hear what you're doing and what your challenges are, and let's tie you into the ecosystem. Sure. I'm eager also to connect with anybody listening to the pod here who wants to help out. I'm hiring this year. I want to hire people who want to help host these all-call events in their cities. I want to hire people who can help me manage this family of business services. This resonates with you. If this whole conversation is resonating with you, please reach out to me. We've just achieved a really major milestone, and we were on a nonprofit all call quarterly, and we just secured a sponsorship for it. And that's going to allow me to grow and scale our impact. So I can't share who it is yet, because the ink is not dry yet. It's going to change our business model. And I'm really excited about that. So yeah, reach out to me if any of this resonates with me and you want to help out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think I know there's a number of veteran entrepreneurs who have and military spouse entrepreneurs who listen to the podcast. I've had as guests on the podcast. So, you know, definitely, I think any of you who have been listening to this, definitely reach out. And there definitely will be links to the website in the show notes, and you know, any social media or anything like that as well will be in the show notes. So if you want to get connected, you want to check out a little bit about them, about Reformed and everything that they're doing, definitely check them out. Go to the show notes, click the links, and get in touch with them there. Mark, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today and kind of learning a little bit about your background and what it is that you're doing with Reformed. I think it's you know, a great system that you have going on, great way to get veteran and military connected businesses to work together and help support each other. Like you said, everyone grows together, you know, when you start working together like this. So I think it's absolutely wonderful, definitely wish you the best of luck in what it is, you know, what you're doing here. So thank you.
I mean, we are stronger together. And I think when you transition out, you know it already, that you need to lean on your brothers and sisters to get you through the transition, no matter what business or industry you're getting into. And for what we've learned with entrepreneurship is that none of us can build a business alone. So if you're listening to the pod, you have an idea for a business, or you're already building a business, reach out to us. Let's talk about your challenges. Let's tie you in, because yes, we're truly stronger together.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. It's been great having you on. And again, anyone who's looking to get in touch with Mark or you know, find out more about Reformed, check out the show notes, and I'll have links to all of that there. And thank you again.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.